Big Easy Open inaugural event in New Orleans. Charlie, Josh, with you. Josh, I don't know if you were watching yesterday the broadcast. There's a shot of Joey Buckets just lying on a bench on his back on like hole 16. And that's how I feel right now. I'm just lying on a bench on my back. I'm on my way to the airport right now. So we'll have a little bit of a time limited reacts here, but I can't miss my flight, folks. I would be truly devastated. So let's just run down the winners really quick. Gannon Burr beats Ricky Wysocki in a playoff. Holland Handley destroys everybody and wins by 8 strokes. Josh, you know, I've been talking a lot about this tournament over the last 72 hours. What are your immediate reacts? Like, first thing that comes to mind after what we saw today?
This tournament does everything that we've ever asked professional disc golf to do, and it would be a travesty if they take it off the tour.
I love that it's a course take.
It's a course take. There's plenty in MPO that we can talk about that is dramatic, and I'm sure we will, but I don't want it to get lost that I think, like, this is a first draft. It needs to, I wish it had been run last year as an A tier. I wish that they had had more time to continue to work on it. But for a first draft, like, I think John Houck really outdid himself. And there are a lot of things that I hope the rest of professional disc golf learns from this course.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's quite obvious that I'm just going to co-sign what you said. I think that's 100% the right take. They needed to have a trial run.
Yeah, and you said that on Thursday and Wednesday, and you were right about that. Yeah.
However, I'm glad that they didn't go too far and make it too easy, because one of the things is it's flat. It's completely 100% flat out there. If you take out too many trees, it's just going to be so boring.
Yep.
And I think a few holes were just not it, but there were some good holes, and there's some holes that are almost really, really good that are like one adjustment away from being really, really good. And at the end of the day, you know, you get to watch players actually have to grind and think and struggle against a course. I don't need to see 17 downs every day. I mean, it has its own kind of like fun element, but this, while sloggy at times, also delivered some of the most epic drama that you're ever going to see. I mean, this is going to be one of the rounds of the year, right? In MPO. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. It was so fun. It was so fun to watch. And, it, you know, forcing players to have to hit circle two putts regularly, fantastic. And then your circle one putts are oftentimes edge of circle putts. It was interesting. We talk about having hard lies as means to like create difficulty, even when you're kind of still technically like right in the middle of the fairway. Those bunkers with all the limbs and crap, which we're going to talk about, great use of that. And, you know, I think like Gannon 18, for example, he's still kind of technically in the middle of the fairway, but that tree bunker means that he's got terrible footing and has to do a standstill. That's exactly what we've talked about having before. I'm a huge fan. I really, really think that they did a nice job. And I like this course. This just belongs on tour.
Josh, I can't believe I have to do this.
Okay.
But people were coming for your head in the chat midway through this round.
Okay.
When Rick was on cruise control up three. Saying, is Rick going to take back, or is Josh going to take back his Rick take? Josh is such a clown. And like, ultimately, Ricky blew another lead against Gannon, a 4-shot lead. And like, I know it's a crazy course, and obviously both guys made some amazing plays, but like, at the end of the day, when you really break it down, Ricky bogeyed 3 of the last 4. And he's going to feel sick after this one.
And missed a, what, 15 footer, if that? 10 footer?
Oh, that's right. Like I actually forgot about that missed putt because of how crazy everything else was. But you're totally right. If he makes that, it's probably not. That probably doesn't matter.
It probably doesn't matter. And listen, I wasn't in the chat. I wasn't saying nothing. But sorry. So like, I don't know what the number is in a final round with Ricky in first and Gannon on lead card. That I go, yep, this is like. Like, I don't need to watch this. This is wraps. Because what was it? Was it seven? Seven on at the Pro Tour Championship last year?
It was an eight. It was a six-shot lead.
Six-shot lead took in and beat him by seven.
Going into the final rounds.
Yeah. So Reed says six. Like, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what the number is. But sorry, everybody. I don't know what else you want from me. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm sorry.
This is just a fascinating event, right? The winner, the playoff is forced through three rounds at 11 under par. This has got to be the lowest scores to par that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, it's possible it's the lowest scores to par we've ever seen on a pro tour.
You know what's funny, Charlie? Back, like, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? You know what this tournament would be in place, or what tournament would hold this spot second on the schedule, right?
Do you
remember?
No.
We used to start LVC, and then we would drive over to Waco. So sure. We would do LVC Waco, and now we're starting Olympus and Big Easy Open. Oh my gosh.
We've upgraded a little bit.
What a completely different start. And one that I think just really delivers golf in a better way.
All right. So we got to talk about some of these calls.
All right, let's do it.
I think it was hole 16.
Go ahead.
No, what, you go.
Well, don't forget, right out the gate, Gannon's given a time extension by somebody else.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Jeff Spring.
Was it Jeff that did it? Okay, that's what I thought.
It was somebody.
So hole one, Gannon's like, it's like, boom, there's one of your timeouts.
Yeah, it's kind of, I hate to be a Gannon apologist, and I'm not, because I think it was a legitimate use of the time extension there, and yep. Like him being forced to use one. But Luke Taylor, like moments later, took like a minute on the tee.
Yes.
I'm like, okay, are you just trying to set a tone with Gannon? Are you trying to like make the, like, can we please enforce the rules consistently? It annoys me when it's like Gannon went over probably by 5 or 10 seconds. It was legit. I have no problem with it.
Yep.
But then Luke Taylor definitely went over. It continues to annoy me, because then other people were like breaking the rule and they were not forced to use their time extensions. And so I don't know. It's a little.
Including on the hole that we're about to talk about with the other drama.
All right. So, let's go to 16.
Okay.
Ricky ends up on the right side.
Yep.
And he's like trying to line up his shot, and he's in the sticks, and he steps in front of his disc and moves some sticks that are like essentially in his forehand line. And Brian's like, he's moving sticks in front of his line. And I'm like, like, you can't do that. And then I'm like looking up the rules to like double check that you can't do that. And you definitely can't do that. But nobody said anything. You know
the Leonardo DiCaprio meme where he's like pointing at the TV and whistle it? Like, that's what I was doing over here. I'm like, wait a minute.
Like, he can't do that. That's not loose debris either. That's like big sticks. That's not loose debris. I feel like it's like quite clear in the new rules that that's not loose debris. But whatever. I'm not going to fight about the semantics of loose debris. But clearly he broke the rule about moving something in front of your line. Then
Ricky moves an entire down tree.
It doesn't get brought up until after the hole. They talk about it before 17. So Gannon's like, hey, like you move sticks in front of your line. And now I'm wondering, okay, did Gannon, like, did his boy text him? Or did he like watch the DGN and see that Ricky moved sticks? Because nothing was said at the moment. So then it's like weird for him to bring it up later. And there's a long discussion about it. Ricky pretends like he doesn't even know what they're talking about and claims he didn't move sticks. It was really, really weird. I don't know if Ricky just doesn't know the rule or like had a brain fart, or if he just genuinely moved the sticks and then tried to pretend that he didn't know he broke the rule. Gannon didn't press the issue. Isaac's like, I didn't see it. Classic disc golf to me.
Classic.
And so no stroke. And it, you know, I think by the book, it clearly should have been a stroke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was weird. And I don't know why Gannon didn't bring it up in the moment, unless somebody mentions here that Gannon saw it on the broadcast. Like, unless if that's the reason why, but otherwise, I cannot believe that Gannon didn't say something. the Ricky Gannon rivalry is turning into quite the fascinating one, where it doesn't really feel, I mean, Gannon very professional in his post round interview, so I don't want to like dog on Gannon too much, but there's no love lost between those guys. I was shocked Gannon didn't call it. I really was. I'm presuming he wasn't watching at the time. I don't know. I don't know why he wouldn't have just called in the moment.
It was very strange. And then again, in the playoff, Ricky goes into the out of bounds and there's like a conversation about where the spot should be. And it was incredibly awkward on the cam. I can't believe how badly that looked. Like Jeff Spring is looking up at the tree as if he's going to do something. I'm like, dude, why isn't somebody down there making an official ruling? Like, you should have somebody there to say, this is where it crossed. This is the spot. And instead, I heard from Perk that Jeremy Colling was like hearing the other players who were shouting at Rick and Gannon. Jeremy's like, no, this is where you should take it from. I'm like, why is Jerome making the ruling? What is this? Ultimately, I actually think Ricky got lucky because from the drone shot, it looked to me like he went in at the corner and he would have been like behind trees.
I want to come
obstructed.
I want to come back to that before we talk about the actual spot. I put in the chat, I cannot believe that our thing in disc golf is like, no, we don't use video replay evidence. And then Gannon and Ricky are actively crowdsourcing the OB location. I was shocked. I could not believe it. And like when Gannon's like, no, you're not taking it in front of the pond. And Ricky's like turning to the crowd for support. I'm like, what is happening right now? I could not believe that they did not have a spotter there for just an official ruling. But I heard
apparently they did have spotters.
Well, that's Rick's like, who put this flag down? And then no one walks up.
I know, nobody was claiming. It was so funny, dude. So funny.
it was so weird. Sorry, it was so weird. I
thought they even had the first. All good. Yeah, getting out.
So to your point on the lie, I think that they got the lie exactly as it should be.
I mean, ultimately, they basically got it right.
Yes.
They didn't get it way wrong. It might have been perfect. It's possible.
In front or to that corner, both requires a level of speculation that I don't think is warranted by the vision and like without the drone shot. That most accurate lie probably is the corner, which would have put him behind the tree and significantly further away. But without that clarity of the video, I really do think the fairest were dropped in and just put him back at the pond on the right side where he has a clear view, but it's on the, you know, the correct side of the pond without definitive evidence that he got across. I really, they got it perfect, but boy, what a clown show to get there.
Sorry, I was muted. You're good. Yeah. And I think, you know, Ricky kind of fighting a little too hard to get a favorable spot, right? I mean, yeah. I don't know. I think some people are going to have a bad taste in their mouth from Rick after that round. And, you know, I don't really think people saying he's cheating. I don't know about that. I mean, I think he was trying to get an edge and not a great look, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, you want people to compete, but not to the point at which maybe they're trying too hard to win, you know?
Yeah. Well, and just, I mean, yeah, it's in the playoff, we should just establish very quickly, like, hey, we don't have two extra players. You know, Jeff's going to be here for calls. We've got extra spotters. Like just the 5 minutes while they're finalizing the scores and getting everything set up, get extra eyes on there. The worst thing you can have is having to make a controversial call without proper official spotting. I don't care if you're, you know, deputizing new spotters for the playoff. If Jerm wants to be a spotter, have Jerm be a spotter. But talk to him before and be like, yo, Jerm, need you to spot. Like, let's get you a vest or something or a hat and like get out there with the flags and be ready to spot and have a couple people do it. I'm fine with that, but we should not be having this fall apart in the playoff like this.
Well, what a crazy round though. I mean, can we just talk about some of these putts? Like, what was the clutchest of all? I mean, Ricky saving it 18 to get into the playoff. Gannon hitting it from 88 feet on the 17th.
That.
I mean, just absolutely insane.
That one, That I mean, Brian called it what, the best putt he's ever seen. That was spectacular. Without that putt, Gannon doesn't get a chance at 18. I was looking at putting stats. Both of them were unbelievable this weekend on the putting green. Rick went 91% from C1X, 29 of 32. Gannon went 23 of 23 in circle two putting. Gannon went 53%, 10 of 19. Rick went 53%, 8 of 15. Just spectacular putting performances from both of them.
It was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. Colin looks like the best player right now, huh? I mean, Josh, your overreaction is I think you can take that L.
Yeah, that one without that was an L. boy, Holland looked so good. And it, like, there was like a moment in round three that hold on, sorry, I'm going from scores. Okay. Through hole four, when she double bogeyed hole four, so bogey, double bogey, and she dropped three strokes there, and you've got like Missy, who's got a stroke back, and you know, Owen had birdied one. Like, I was like, oh, Holland not so good. And then she proceeded to quiet the doubters by ripping off five birdies over the next eight holes. And
yeah, I mean, it's you know, despite the overall final margin, I do think that it was a little tight there at times for Holland. She wasn't throwing her best shots in the final round. You know, Missy making it kind of interesting, but you have to look at the round in totality. And like after those first few holes, when Holland wasn't playing great, she locked in.
I think that's actually, and I think either you or Sarah mentioned as well, that actually makes this more impressive to me, that Holland has like that really rough start and bounces back. That this to me makes it more like, I'm more excited for Holland as opposed to she just goes par, rips off five birdies and doesn't even have to think about it because she wins by 12 strokes. The like overcoming the adversity gives more legitimacy to a win that ultimately was by just a massive margin.
Well, you know, it's quite obvious to me that the insufficiencies with most other players' forehands just continues to haunt them. Like,
yes,
at the end of the day, Holland being able to throw a forehand, like, people are talking about Silva out here, but Silva would have also struggled because of the lack of the forehand. I mean, I think Silva would have done well, probably would have finished under par, but I think she still loses to Holland here because it's just Holland has all the spins and other players just don't. And like, that adds up over time. And also, Holland's putting great now. Like, to me, she just looks like the best player.
Yeah, I think you're right. The one point that I thought was interesting that Sarah mentioned was, you know, on the MPO side, the design of great shots get you to circle two, or good shots get you to circle two, and circle one requires something truly spectacular. That works for like MPO when you've got Rick and Gannon who can putt C2 50%. But for FPO who aren't, you know, I think the top player was Cap Merch, who went 4 of 14. Okay, that's not true. The top player, Eliezer Midley, went 5 of 12. For 42%. But after that, like Cap Merch at 29%, a lot of your top players were around that 20 to 25% mark. That is not as big of a reward as it is for MPO. And I thought that was also just like really, like Sarah had some really, really great analysis on the color rule today. And that was one that stuck out to me. And Holland doesn't have like that, like a putting deficiency in any way, 92 and 24. And so without somebody like Owen playing absolutely spectacular from the greens, there was no chance that anybody was going to catch Holland given the completeness of her game.
What else, Josh? I'm going through security right now. So
got it. Because
my phone is going through the X-ray machine, but I'm going to keep my headphones in and see if I get through. Okay.
That's so funny.
What else stands out? I mean, there's lots of interesting young players doing cool stuff this weekend.
The Joey Buckets like uncursing might actually be a real storyline. Another great showing from Joseph Anderson, who goes, who takes fifth place. Ty, it's so sad that Ty Love ties his, like, his best ever finish was seventh, and he ends up dropping down to seventh. But another player, he's got, that guy's got wild form. Played well. I know we've seen somebody, like, I think Cole Rodon is the one who hypes up Ty Love and is friends with him. It was really fun watching him, but his form is unlike anybody else's on tour.
That dude can throw it a mile, though. Holy
oh,
crap.
Yeah. He crushes. Isaac Robinson in top three. I said when we talked to Hauk that Isaac Robinson should be a lock for picks, and then I didn't, and that was dumb because Isaac Robinson, of course, played well at this course. Chris Dickerson with the sneaky sixth place finish. Good for him. Yeah, I think that's the big stuff in MPO. See, Chris Dickerson was the hot round today. That's nice. Devil Camel, I think that's right, that the best course comp is the monster. I think that's a better course comp than WR Jackson is. That's a great point. Over on FPO, I don't know, it's hard. Like, Valerie Mondejano has another good finish. Lisa Fakus also starting well. Both of those are nice performances. Ida Emily Ness, top 10. Trying to see if there's anybody who, like, I don't even think we have one that, like, well underperformed what we were expecting. The Taylor Chosik hype train might settle down a little bit after this weekend.
I'm back.
You're back? Great.
I'm back. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
They made me take my earbuds out.
Oh my gosh. Gannon's? Did you see Gannon's event rating for the win?
I'm sure it's terrible.
1046.
I mean, this it's just not real. I mean, you saw the rating on Ricky's 10 under, which, by the way, we haven't even talked about yet. I mean, what an unbelievable round yesterday from Ricky. It's just that much more painful that he didn't win.
Hey, remember the bet on whether or not there's going to be a double-digit round? Don't doubt these pros, man.
Seriously.
There's always one of them.
But, like, what's crazy is that he's the only one who even came close. Like,
I know.
Took an ace for Luke Taylor to shoot a seven.
but crazy, it's all right. Huh? Silas and I got the over, so we're good.
God damn it.
Ricky said that round two was a top three round of his life, which honestly, that seems right. I mean, he played spectacularly in round two. I good for him. It was so cool. It was so fun to watch that.
Clark asked me, you predicted FPO might score better than MPO for final score. Was FPO layout harder than you thought? Did folks not play as well as you thought, or both / neither? No, I think MPO played about to expectations, maybe even a little under. I think FPO underperformed somewhat, but nah, I don't know. I don't know if I would say that. Just more that I expected it to play a little easier than it did.
I think there were a couple.
So, yeah, I mean, ultimately that's what I thought.
Yeah. Over on FPO, the spreads, especially. Yeah, there were a handful of holes where the spreads just really weren't great in FPO, but that was true in MPO as well. I wonder. I would love to talk about, and maybe we should do this week. We don't need to do it today, but this week I want to talk about what an ideal scoring spread is for a course. Like, how many holes do you want? Like, does every hole have to have a certain scoring spread? Do we want certain holes with different spreads? What should that look like? I think we should talk about that. And so if people here want to, like, send in emails of your opinions on what scoring spreads should look like, I think that's a worthwhile discussion in the wake of this event.
You know, I think that one of the things this course needs, it just needs a little bit more opportunities for players to take a breath. Like, there's just too many holes in a row that are so grindy and brutal. It makes the pace of the round slow down too much. Like, it doesn't have rhythm. That's a problem. Like, you don't want that. Like, this is an entertainment product. It's not just a battle to challenge the pros to the maximum, you know?
Uh-huh.
You want to try to make it be challenged, but, like, I think you still need to have a couple more gettable holes. And, like, they have those little patch of three par threes in the middle. That is what I'm talking about, but they need, like, one more of those in the middle of the front nine and the middle of the back nine, because otherwise it's just like,
And Mike puts a great point in here that because there are so few easy holes, the easy holes on this course are absolute must gets. So it doesn't feel relaxing.
All right.
Right. Like
my only chance to birdie is now.
Right. Like, there is nowhere else you're making it up. So it's here or never. And that's exhausting. That's exhausting.
What else do we want to talk about? Hit us with your thoughts in the chat. What are the questions? Zach asked if the round two birdie from Luke Taylor was the only hole 18 birdie. No, there were three, all coming in round two. Freddie Meza got it, and probably remember. Oh, Goose got it. Yeah, he got a really good one.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I don't know. It just disappeared.
Devil asks if Gannon's all-time rating record is over. No, he'll get there.
Do you think
this isn't helping? But like, I mean, come on, one tournament's not going to ruin his chances to get past 1060, whatever. He played at that level.
Do you think it's going to be? Do you think it's? Is there a chance it's low enough that one or two of them might drop off? I don't know how low exactly has to be. I know it's based on like.
It's actually insane to even consider the fact. What was it? 1040 something.
Yeah, 1046, 1043 to 1049 were his round ratings.
Crazy. Fraser says, is it a course design failure that so many shots went over the top? Absolutely. I mean, it's not even just that it's like they need a Mando. It's like they need to make it more fair to throw shots through the gaps.
I will say, I like that the going over the top is an option, though, because when the wind picked up,
sure,
that became a real
hole 12 especially.
Danger. Yeah, yeah. Like, that was really dangerous. And we saw times when that play both created reward, like on hole 17, hole 18. But there were also opportunities when it went horribly wrong because of the wind. And so, but you're absolutely right, Charlie. Some of those lines just were not fair. There was no meaningful way that a player could approach it. And that's just not good golf. Loved the decision making though. I thought that was fantastic.
Players had to think on every single shot, everyone for the entire round. It was kind of cool to watch them have to deal with it. Can I remind you that we're playing doubles at the Preserve? They're going to all shoot 17 under. I'll be back one.
Wait, did you say you had to go? Well, hey everybody. he said he'll be back. Okay, it kind of caught for me right as he said it, and so I was not sure. I was not sure what he said. Yeah, 19 down at the Preserve double. That is definitely a possibility. Would not even doubt that. Charlie's getting patted down right now. No, Charlie's probably.
I'm getting dinner.
I was like, Charlie's sprinting through the airport so he doesn't miss this flight like that one time.
Dude, it's actually a miracle. My flight was supposed to leave at 8. Thank you. 8, 40. And I just got through security. Now, I didn't like rush, but I think best case scenario I was going to miss my flight. So I caught a delay about 2.5 hours ago, and I was like, I've never been so happy to get an airport delay.
Yeah. I love when it works out that way. Wild Run.
If people are wondering, I got fried rice with pot stickers.
From Panda?
No, it's called Wow Bow.
Oh. I mean, it sounds good. I love not terribly authentic Chinese food, personally. So
yeah, I needed something fast. Normally I go to the lounge, but I don't have time. Okay, what else, folks?
Okay, Charlie, this question, match penalty directs us your way. Do you get the feeling there's some bad blood brewing between Burr and Rick? Gannon does give him flowers in interviews, but today's situation, along with the lucky comments from Rick, raised some questions.
I think it's a heavy dose of mutual respect, but also some frustration starting to boil up on both sides. I don't think they really like each other too much. I think they don't respect each other as competitors. And I mean, there's just, they've gone to war so many times now. I feel like it's just going to keep being like this.
Well, and it's also combined with like time violations and calls, with massive like upset comeback rounds. The history is not that far back, but it is getting very rich very quick between Gannon and Rick. It's to the point. I'll say it. I mean this. I am more excited when I see Gannon and Rick on a lead card than when I see Rick and Paul.
100%. No, Rick and Paul is like, it's like late career Federer Nadal, where they're like glad handing a lot, you know?
Right.
It's
like, right. And for some reason, they never play well when that happens. But Gannon and Rick on the lead card has been great every single time. I don't know about every time. It sticks in my brain a lot.
They also bring out the best in each other, you know?
They do. Yeah, they really do. It's like their dislike for each other pushes them to play better. I love it. I think that is peak lead card, is when you've got those two going at it.
Paul Rick died at like Open at Belton 2022. I'm serious.
You're so right. Do you remember that? I think like we had just talked about like, oh yeah, like what are these silver series? Like are they a big deal? Do they actually not matter? I don't really know. And then Chris Dickerson, Paul, and Rick are like, throwback 2015 energy. It was wild.
Let me remind you that Paul and Rick were together on a lead card at USDGC last year, and we were so hyped, and then they both played like garbage.
Terrible.
It was terrible.
It's happened several times. They get on the lead card, and we're like, here we go, the Rick-Paul battle.
Back. And then
they're like, no thanks. That's the last decade.
Okay, can I give you the quote? My quote of the broadcast.
Yes.
On day, Brian Earhart called it back today, but on day, I guess yesterday, so day two.
Okay.
We saw a Ricky shot, and it was some good shot, but he only had one camera on him, so we see him throw it, and it goes off into the distance behind. We can't see where it goes, and he claps. And I go, we're like, we don't see you. So I'm like, okay, what the fuck am I supposed to say? So I go, you know it's good when he gives you the clap. And Brian like barely held it together. And then we're dying in the break after I said that. I'm like, I feel like I got away with it a little bit because like I haven't been horribly memed on the internet, but that was maybe not as good as Terry Miller trees sucking dicks, but.
You said Velcro grass this weekend, and I was like, "Oh, Charlie, don't go down! Like, don't do it, man! Velcro. Don't go down! Don't go down that road! It doesn't go well."
It's like Velcro, dude.
Oh my gosh!
Too much.
Oh, can someone find the Terry Miller Velcro trees? clip. I think there are some people who do not understand that reference.
This is and iconic,
their,
dude.
Their lives will be better when they do.
I feel like the clap is obscure enough now as a term for gonorrhea that people don't really know it anymore. So like, I got away with it.
Yeah.
But we were dying in the break.
You didn't have my mood in.
No, they didn't react to they didn't react in the control room at all.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was a fun round though, huh?
Oh my gosh. It was so great. I'm just so glad because by the last third of FPO, I was like, okay, please don't let MPO with a fourth shot lead be the same one.
My God, dude, I never fly American, but I have to because it's the last flight out of Charlotte. It's just absolute chaos in this terminal right now. There's a million people. Everyone looks stressed. And the line for like rebooking is like 100 people deep. I'm praying my flight gets out of here.
Didn't you say friends don't let friends fly American? I think that you're the
dude,
one.
Dude, and they close. They're like, CSA pre-check's closed. It's like 9 p.m. and the airport is fucking packed and they close pre-check. So I got to take off my computer, blah, blah, blah. Come on, man.
Charlie, hey, you are the bougiest traveler I've ever met.
Listen, I want things as smooth as possible. I fly a lot, folks.
I guess so. My goodness.
Are there severe storms? No.
Are there?
I might get cooked. Who knows? At least I made it to the airport.
Out in the Rocky Mountain, Idaho, they are like closing highways because of 65 mile an hour winds.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, I think this like, giant storm that's in the middle of the country that's like over right now is about to hit New Orleans tomorrow. We're lucky we didn't have it today. Because I think tomorrow it's going to be like 40 mile per hour winds and thunderstorms. All right. I would have to go here momentarily.
Dogs? Dogs and rap?
Oh, dogs. Yes, let's do it. Dogs and rap.
Okay.
Jon Scoggins' dog of the weekend. FPO. I'm just doing it off the top of my head. I'm not looking at the leaderboard. I'm going to go Ida Amelia Nessa. She's out here killing it, dude. She's on tour, first time in the U.S., and she's getting top 10. She looks awesome. She's throwing it so great. If she learns to putt, she's going to be a killer.
Great take. Great pick.
You get to have the freebie. Go ahead.
I do have the freebie. Give me Vegas. Give me Vegas. The back-to-back weeks, like, come on.
What a start.
This is great. Yeah. I mean, Lisa Fakus has been so close so many times. I really hope that Rebecca Cox and Lisa Fakus both get one this week or this year.
Dude, I gotta be honest with you. I mean, I'm rooting for Rebecca Cox as much as anybody, but she no shows final round every time.
I know she does
every time, Josh.
I think Fakus
don't know
could
if she's
it.
Got the mental game to hang in there. I mean, Fakus is a rock solid putter and like doesn't seem to get shaken in the final round. But you know, remember back when she did have a chance, 2021 Utah Worlds.
Okay,
biffed that putt on 16. She could have won the tournament.
Yes, but her putt, I think her putt rolled, like hit the cage and then rolled into the water, didn't it? And so she took an OB stroke.
Yeah, it was a bad roll away, but it was also a bad miss.
It was a C1 miss. You're right. But
I'm just saying, like, she hasn't been in that many high leverage putting spots, but I don't think she's going to win one. I just don't know if she's got the ceiling for it, but great to see her playing so well. She's definitely playing the best she's played in years.
I know. It's so great. I really hope. I like Lisa a lot. And she carries a pound bag, so we always love that.
True facts.
MPO? I want Ty Love. This is a little bit of a softball
game,
but it's a great finish from him, and it's too bad that he couldn't break above seventh, but it was so fun watching him. I was not familiar with the way that guy threw, and it was so, so much fun.
I'm going Joey Buckets, Josh.
Joseph Anderson, mind you.
Yes. Mr. Joseph Anderson.
That's don't put that evil on him.
Joseph Anderson sounds like the guy from The Matrix. I forget what his actual name was in The Matrix. But, I just two events playing great. Looking like his old self, you know. I think he was dealing with a little bit of an injury last year, back injury, and also maybe expectations. Kind of felt like his sophomore slump, and he's like back.
He's back.
Great to see
another Georgia man at the top with Isaac Robinson now. So it's good for him. Good for him. Just gotta keep the name back. We'll see if he gets rid of the bucket as the profile picture. Does he win a tournament?
Well, he's already won a tournament, so I can keep the bucket.
That's right.
All right, folks. Silas Schultz is a good call, playing great at home. Mm-hmm. Love to see that. He was fun to watch this week.
Silas is such a fun interview, too. I'm so glad we had him on.
All right, folks. We'll be back Tuesday. and lots more to talk about. I mean, this is a crazy one. This was a crazy one. Going to be a memorable tournament at the end of the year, I think. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Charlie. Get some sleep.
All right, everybody. Good night.